Obiang invited Rice to visit Equatorial Guinea. She said that if Obiang continued with reforms in human rights and democratization and invested in the social sector, Equatorial Guinea could indeed become a model country in Africa. It was the sort of pablum that had been exchanged between Obiang and senior Bush administration officials ever since the 2004 coup attempt. Like Colin Powell, Rice had gently mentioned human rights as an American priority, but she had not pressured or scolded Obiang. They rose to meet the reporters waiting outside. Photographers snapped them standing together, smiling. Rice called Obiang a good friend of the United States. She went on to make her comments about Iran. The next day, the Washington Post pointedly reported Rice's remark about America's friendship with Obiang. Other journalists, human rights groups, and congressional aides soon denounced Rice for naively coddling a dictator. As the unfavorable commentary accumulated, Rice was embarrassed, pissed off, angry, an advisor involved in the episode recalled. It was yet another setback for Obiang and his regime in their effort to become West Africa's Kuwait in Washington's perception. Cassidy and Associates advised Obiang to wait for the next American president before pushing for more engagement. ExxonMobil, Marathon, and Hess lobbied the Bush administration hard, arguing that Equatorial Guinea was an important country too often neglected, according to an advisor involved in the effort. But the companies did not want to be tainted by accusations that they ignored human rights violations any more than Condoleezza Rice did. As a fallback, it was easier for both ExxonMobil and the Bush administration to quietly encourage Obiang to build up his defenses with Israel. Wayne Clark, an ebullient Texan, served as ExxonMobil's country representative in Malabo as the Obama administration took office. ExxonMobil country managers typically rotated every few years. Clark's predecessor in Equatorial Guinea, Jim Spears, had recently moved on to Angola. The corporation's production from its offshore Zafiro field had leveled out to about 200,000 barrels per day, but at $80 per barrel, that still amounted to a business with about $5.8 billion in annual revenue. ExxonMobil maintained its low profile in Malabo. Its elevated compound along the airport road had undergone none of the expensive renovations visible elsewhere in the capital after 2007. Oil workers shuttled to and from the corporation's offshore platforms by helicopter, and they moved in and out of Equatorial Guinea while interacting only minimally with local citizens. ExxonMobil's policy about working in Equatorial Guinea, approved by headquarters in Irving and distributed as talking points to public affairs officers worldwide, echoed the arguments that Anton Smith made in his cables to the incoming Obama administration. The policy was reflected in 2009 talking points on human rights that were issued for use when uncomfortable questions about the corporation's partnership with governments like Equatorial Guinea's arose. The talking points reflected the evolution of ExxonMobil's attitudes toward human rights matters since the days of the Aceh Civil War, but also the continuity of its commitment to work with any government that would agree to acceptable legal contract terms, and that was not subject to prohibitive sanctions under American or international law. We publicly condemn the violation of human rights in any form, and actively express our views to governments around the world, the prepared talking point said. We have been dealing with these issues for many years and believe that our efforts improve the quality of life in communities where we operate. ExxonMobil is very concerned about human rights. However, we also believe that engagement enhances the cause of human rights far more than political isolation. Our practices are designed to ensure respect for human rights in our sphere of influence, which may, by example, have its effect on others. It was in ExxonMobil's interest for Obiang's government to be able to defend itself from invaders. It was also in ExxonMobil's interest for Equatorial Guinea to improve its reputation. Simeon Motes, the former State Department official who worked on Africa policy in ExxonMobil's Washington office, developed a PowerPoint presentation entitled Business Practices and Transparency, which described, in simple and graphic form, the corporation's philosophy about the allocation of responsibilities in poor and troubled countries. ExxonMobil would contribute taxes and royalties, as well as transparency to the host African government. The government would in turn take responsibility for the rule of law, health, education, and the business environment. ExxonMobil's disciplined, modern business practices could also strengthen the national economy. What's missing? Moats' slide presentation asked. One slide offered a troubling list in answer. Rule of law, predictable regulations, the sanctity of contracts, transparency of transactions, an educated and healthy workforce, and basic infrastructure. This was the gap African governments would have to fill while ExxonMobil carried out its profit-making role and provided taxes and royalties in support. ExxonMobil had enough trouble trying to educate the African despots it worked with about the basic functioning of a global oil industry. Persuading these leaders to emulate Singapore seemed unrealistic. When oil prices fell sharply after the global financial crisis of 2008, for example, Idriss Deby in Chad accused ExxonMobil of deliberately holding down oil production to ride out the low prices. The charge lacked logic. ExxonMobil was suffering financially too. But Deby was deeply suspicious of Stéphane de Mailloux, Ron Royal's successor as ExxonMobil lead country manager in N'Djamena. Deby implied that ExxonMobil might be coming under pressure from third parties to hold down production so as to weaken Deby's regime and aid the president's enemies. ExxonMobil arranged a meeting between Deby and some of the corporation's Africa hands in Washington. The ExxonMobil team told Deby that it was firmly committed to maximizing its own profits, which implied maximization of production, and that ExxonMobil would not permit of any pressure by any third party to change that policy, according to an account provided later by de Mailloux. The team noted that ExxonMobil had never abandoned operations despite Chad's past political instability, including multiple rebel invasions. Deby gradually backed off.